The research is there. When women are in charge, businesses do better. So then, why the dearth of women in the boardroom and at the top? Central Ohio is a prime example, it turns out, where the percentage of seats held by women on the boards of publicly traded companies is 12.6%, compared to 15.7% nationally. Neither statistic is actually a ringing endorsement, but joining us to talk about that is Carrie Ghosh. She's a reporter for the Columbus Business First. Carrie also worked 5 years for the Associated Press in Columbus, which is how I met her. Welcome to the show, Carrie.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Julie Graber. Julie is the CEO of the Institute on Women. It's a nonprofit research organization on the economic and educational status of women and girls in Ohio. She has served as president of the Board of Women for Economic and Leadership Development, otherwise known as WELD, and was honored by the YWCA of Columbus as a Woman of Achievement in 2007 for her lifelong commitment to research and advocacy work for women. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Thanks, Anne.
So, Carrie, you've reported on the Central Ohio Leadership Census the past couple weeks. It was released, I guess, May 20th or that week by Women for Economic Leadership Development and the Institute on Women, working with Otterbein University. Did anything surprise you about the results of the survey?
What surprised me was how little it changed, because I'd done pretty much the same story when I first came to Business First, or it was my first year. So it was about May of 2008, mm-hmm. and that's when we do our annual Women in Business supplement, and I did the cover story that year, and I was looking at status and pay of women in Central Ohio. I looked at the largest public companies. I looked at the hospitals. Found the only CEO was Carrie Anderson, and she was not long for that office because Wendy's had just been acquired. Mm-hmm. Everyone else, the top was executive vice president, and then I sorted them by pay from publicly available documents. And the top paid women in either the hospital, nonprofit sector, and in the corporate sector, none of them cracked the top five. And here we are in 2011, and what surprised me, nothing had changed. Still the highest paid woman in Central Ohio by publicly available records is Sharon Turney. She's the CEO of the Victoria's Secret line at Limited. She was number six overall back then. She jumped to number five overall amongst all executives in 2009, and in 2010 she's back at number six overall. And then she is an outlier. All the other women public executives, they fall, 17 and below in the rank of all executives, and no one again is above executive VP level or in the hospital sector. There'll be a president of a hospital, Janet Meeks at St. Anne's, but not CEO of the system.
And you said how little it changed. So how little did it change in that three-year period or two-year period?
One CEO we had, we lost, a female CEO.
So percentage-wise, almost nil.
Then. Yeah, almost the same.
It's such a small number. Looking at the percent isn't really telling the whole story. It's so easy to just look at the raw numbers, right, Julie?
Sure. And in fact, if you look at the raw numbers, it didn't change at all. The number of women serving on corporate boards in Central Ohio was 34. And I can go back to 2001 with the numbers, and it's 34 this year in 2011. So in the last decade, while there's been some variation, the number of women or the number of seats held on corporate boards by women hasn't changed. The percentage has gone up, but that's because the number of public companies has gone down.
Which is more bad news that we're not even here to talk about today. Carrie, there's another percentage. You compared the percentage in Ohio with the national average. Is Ohio kind of ranked that way?
I don't think biologists would call it statistically significant, but
exactly.
in their report, it was, about 2 points below the national average, which surprised me because Central Ohio is usually very progressive. You have companies that are very open about domestic partner benefits and wanting diversity, and yet where's the walk to go with the talk? I mean, we're falling behind the national average.
So, Julie Graber, is Ohio's falling behind? It hasn't moved much. Is that pretty much true everywhere?
Yes, it is. And I think one of the things that concern a lot of folks who look at this kind of information is the fact that there hasn't been a change, or it's actually declined in many cases. As Carrie indicated, you know, we lost the one female CEO we had of a public company. And that's true here in Central Ohio, and it's true if you look across the nation, and really across sectors. Women have really stalled in terms of progress.
What inspired you to do the to do this research now, again?
Actually, it's a partnership project. And WELD, Women for Economic and Leadership Development, which is a local organization that focuses on the economic status of women, was interested in doing this work and came to the Institute, given the fact that I had done similar research over the years. And we were fortunate to bring in Otterbein University as a partner, and they provided some additional resources in terms of research associates. So the impetus was really WELD's desire to put this information out into the public conversation and to do it on an annual basis so that we could really start to track numbers and talk about what it takes to change them.
My guests are Julie Graber. She's CEO of the Institute on Women, and also Carrie Ghosh. She's a reporter for Business First. If you have a question or comment for them, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about the status of women in publicly traded companies, private owned companies, and also in nonprofit and public service. If you have a question, 614-292-8513. So it's not much better in higher education either, Julie.
No, it isn't. And in fact, we actually had a kind of unique situation a number of years ago when a significant number of our higher education institutions were headed by women. We're talking about time when Karen Holbrook was the head of OSU, mm-hmm. and Val Mohler was the head of Columbus State. So really, we've seen a decline in the number of women in higher ed here in the local community. I think if you look nationally, again, the numbers just seem to be staying the same. Our numbers aren't that different than the national average, and the numbers don't move that much, except in our case, we've had a decline in that particular area.
So, Carrie Ghosh, any feedback from the business community when they look at this, or is because it hasn't changed much, how would they respond in the first place?
What I found, and I was under a compressed deadline, but I found reluctance to call me back on the issue. Mm-hmm. To talk about it, you know, and I talked to Alex Fisher, the Columbus Partnership, and he, in his interview, wanted to keep turning the topic back to diversity of all stripes. He said that, you know, the Columbus Partnership, it's made up of 34 of the CEOs or board chair persons of top private and public companies in Ohio. This is the leadership trust in Columbus in Central Ohio. Three of those 34 are women. And I said, is this a problem? Is this something you're working on? He said, well, we've been talking about diversity for a long time, and not just that, but ethnic diversity, especially economic diversity, and training new leaders. And it's, you know, it's a good conversation to have. But he didn't want to directly answer questions about the status of women.
So breaking women out, I mean, is that a fair thing to do, Julie? Or is it true that the conversation should be maybe you look at all diversity and all different kinds of diversity in the workplace and not just at women? And
well,
has it improved?
I think diversity across a wide range of indicators is important, but we're talking about a particular group that happens to be 51% of the population and nearly 50% of the labor force, and they outnumber men in terms of higher education anymore. So I think when you look at start to look at diversity, one of the first places you have to look at is what is the gender mix. Always applying a gender lens. Now, our report also deals with women of color, where we could, we tried to identify the number of women who were also race or ethnicity, ethnically diverse, mm-hmm. so that we had a handle on that. And those numbers, we actually, in the public companies, run a little higher than the national average there in terms of the number of seats held by women of color. But again, I would say, you know, this is the only population, when you're looking at diverse populations, that is in fact 51% of people and nearly 50% of the workforce. So I think that's one of the first places you have to go.
So when we're looking at 50% of the workforce, if you look at the inflow of labor into the labor market, 51% of them, nearly 50% of them are women. Where's the drop off in the career trajectory? Where are they dropping off the map of leadership?
There's a national organization that uses a pyramid, because you look at women as close to 50% of the labor force. By the time you get to managerial positions, it's somewhere around 35%. And the numbers just get smaller the higher up you go in the organization. So there is research that shows that women actually start out at the very beginning at a disadvantage, very often at lower pay and possibly in roles that have less career trajectory. There was a report done that found that newly minted MBAs, women on average received $4,600 less in their very first job than their male counterparts, and they controlled for everything in terms of type of school. And it tends, the minute you start to kind of climb up the management ladder, you start to see the numbers decline. But in some respects, women start off at a disadvantage.
There's at least a correlation then that as the numbers decline, there's also, you can see a correlation of they're also earning less at that every level.
Absolutely.
So there's not the same incentives?
Well, I don't know if it's the incentive piece of it, but I don't know that that's a factor that comes into it. But mm-hmm. what you do see to go along with the decline in senior leadership roles is certainly differences in compensation. And when you take $3,000 or $4,000 at the very beginning of a person's career, and even if you make no other changes in terms of compensation, over their lifetime, women will earn $300,000 to $400,000 less just by starting at $3,000 to $4,000 lower than their male counterparts. Just in what wouldn't be normal compensation increases. Now, factor in differences in kinds of assignments and women taking leave for maternity, and the difference can be close to $1 million by the time you're done.
Kiri Ghosh, when you said you were trying to get some feedback from the business community about this and they didn't return your calls, did anyone tell you they didn't return the calls because they didn't want to talk about it?
I think it was more I only gave them about half a day.
Well, that's the news business.
But, yeah. No, it's more just, for instance, you know, I talked to Limited for the story back in 2008, and they said, you know, they said new employees come here and they're amazed at all the women they see, and, you know, they were very open about then. This time they just said, sorry, we don't have enough time on deadline, because they make up two of the top five paid women, and all of these top five paid women are in retail. We have Limited, Abercrombie, DSW making up the top five highest paid corporate women. And you mentioned, you know, where's the drop off? And mm-hmm. when I talked to Tony Rucci, who's a Fisher College of he's on this campus Fisher College of Business professor, and he said that he teaches management courses there, and what he's seeing is, or what researchers are seeing, is a big exodus from the middle management ranks in the early 30s, which is the kind of key time where middle managers are being groomed to move up. And he said every time there's a woman speaker to his class, they speak of an inflection point in their career. Do I decide between buckling down and, you know, going for the top, or do I focus on my family right now? And quite often, those speakers, and he knows there are very successful women in Columbus. But what they did was, and they got to that inflection point, is say, I am leaving this corporate world. I'm going to start my own company. So you have the Nancy Kramers of the world starting Resource Interactive. He classified her as probably the most successful entrepreneur in Central Ohio. You have Jenny Brittenbauer, Jenny's Ice Creams, who is apparently, now they're selling her ice cream on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. That entrepreneurial ventures are where women are taking their success because they can then order their lives around their families. But does that mean then that the corporate world needs to become more entrepreneurial, to learn from, if they're losing this resource, this diversity, what can they do to fix that? He said one way is to make sure women early in their careers, in their late 20s, are placed in roles of responsibility where they are directly controlling profit and loss of a product line. So again, you look at these retail executives, head of Victoria's Secret, head of Bath and Body Works. They are running profit and loss. They're not executive vice president of communications.
When we return, we're going to talk about what women do bring to the table and why is it they would put them in charge of the balance sheet and not in charge of the board of directors. Thank you, Kiri Ghosh, for joining us.
Thank you.
And stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. 88 degrees in downtown Columbus with a high of 96 today. With the heat index, it'll feel like 108. Mostly sunny skies with a chance of a shower or thunderstorm.
Support for 89.7 comes from Antioch University Midwest, helping working adults complete their bachelor's degree by offering 7 broad BA programs, including literature and creative writing and early childhood education. Details at midwest.antioch.edu.
So what exactly do women bring to the boardroom? What do they bring to the upper levels of management in publicly traded, privately owned and companies and also the public sector? With us today, Julie Graber. She's the CEO of the Institute on Women. Thanks again, Julie, for joining us.
Thanks, Ann.
And also joining us now is Scott Bowles. He works for Sequent in Dublin. It's a human resources firm that works primarily with small and medium-sized businesses. And Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks for asking me.
So women bring a lot of value to an organization. This is a fact, whether it's publicly owned, privately owned, or nonprofit. How do we know that?
Well, statistically, and this is off of national data from the Department of Labor, the women-owned businesses are actually more profitable on the balance sheet and actually through stocks. And I didn't bring all the statistics today. We were just going to talk a little bit about Ohio. And to touch a little bit on the facts that we're trying to drive, it is primarily because of the fact that women tend to take jobs that aren't comprised of the ladder up, and there's a bit of a fallacy of a glass cliff, if you will, that many times that women are promoted into positions that don't necessarily aren't built for success, and actually Harvard Business Review found that to not necessarily be true. So what other things are they fighting? Well, maybe even how they're dressed, whereas a male doesn't necessarily have to worry about how he's dressed or someone making a comment on something like that.
But, you know, there's a lot of men out there that are wacky dressers and probably have horrible personalities and have all sorts of things going against them, but they're elevated up into these upper echelons. And you're saying that women bring more value, that the balance sheets are telling us in the stock prices are telling us that these companies are profitable, that they do very well when women are at the helm. So capitalists, all the capitalists out there, why would it not be in their vested interest to promote and hire more women?
It's a bit of a double standard. Still, In all my research before, when we did the chat at the Metropolitan Club,
Columbus Metropolitan,
all the data pointed to the fact that there just is a good old boy network still.
Julie, is that what you figure as a researcher, or is there a glass ceiling? Is there also a sticky floor that women are kind of putting themselves in positions where the trajectory doesn't lead to the boardroom?
Well, I think what the challenge that we face is that there's a kind of accepted path up to the top, and it doesn't mesh with women's lives. And for a lot of folks, the answer is, well, that's okay. They made a choice to have a family. But I say it's time to change that career trajectory. It's time to build more flexibility into it so that women aren't having to make what folks call choices and I call compromises in their careers.
We're talking about women in business and women in leadership roles. Have you been in a position, have you been on that trajectory as a woman and then stopped short for one reason or another? Give us a call and tell us why. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go on to the website and talk to us on Facebook. Scott Bowles, so when you're talking to businesses, when you're trying to place, and you're kind of a headhunter kind of a person, and you're trying to place a woman in a business, is this the kind of feedback you're getting, that it's sort of these visual, these superficial kinds of things?
Not always. And I've got to say, it's encouraging to know that people are trying to change. And I would say it has a lot to do with education, empowerment, empowering girls, starting with, at school age, getting a confidence level in a different way. Women tend to fall on that demure side. And if you're teaching your daughter, hey, if you want to be president, you're going to have to,
It's a socialization issue. There's another thing, too, that women aren't very good at negotiating, or they're not socialized to negotiate for things like pay and compensation and those kinds of things. Julie?
Actually, women are very good negotiators when they're negotiating for somebody else. But we're socialized. Women are socialized to take care of others first. And it's one of those structures that is built into the way that we work that ultimately discriminates against women. That lack of negotiation from the very first job, as we were talking about previously, it sets them up long term for reduced compensation overall and probably a different career path. It also affects kind of where women end up in terms of focusing their careers. One of our challenges, though, is we've got a group of young women growing up right now who've been told that they can do anything. Their self-confidence is probably in the best shape of any generation of young women for a long time. And what they don't get when they get into the workplace is that, in fact, there are still barriers that they have to figure out how to get past.
614-292-8513. Have you been on a trajectory that you thought was going to lead to the top and you stopped short for some reason? Give us a call and let us know what that was and what happened. And a friend of mine who's a big shot in a company said, ask about whether the men and the men who are in charge and the men who are in a position to bring women up still think that that's an imperative. Is that something out there in the work culture and in the corporate culture that is still important?
Well, it brings balance. It absolutely brings balance to any business. Most of the progressive businesses that I work with, and some of my colleagues work with, will agree that getting as many different perspectives, and a woman's perspective is incredibly valuable in business. And so that being said, that's where the value comes in promoting the right person, putting the right person in the right seat, and potentially letting them grow, empowering them to continue to succeed within the business and try to grow within. Now, once again, back to some of the data, it's a struggle. Most women tend to be promoted from outside, so they don't necessarily go up the ladder within the company they're at. That is statistical data to show that to actually run up the ladder within a company, they'll usually get to a ceiling of some sort, and their promotion will actually go by another job.
Allison in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hi. I live here in Columbus, and I had gotten married about 5 or 6 years ago. And even then, now I'm 35, graduated from 3 colleges, have 3 different degrees. And although I did choose to stay at home, which I have been for the past 3 years, very early on when we were engaged after finishing college, we got married. Even still, his career was more of a preference based upon, you know, interviewing family members and even close family members, was still very much a priority, so to speak.
Is this something you talked with your when you were engaged? Is this something you talked about before you got married?
Yes. And although he was a proponent to support me in whatever I wanted to do, career or staying at home more, it was still not necessarily with him, but like my parents' generation, baby boomers and up, mm-hmm. strongly, emphatically encouraged me to put the career on hold until after they graduate college, meaning my kids, and then go do whatever it is that you want to do. And I have 3 different degrees in 3 different industries, and so, you know, it was a fairly diverse conversation I was having with my parents, his parents, you know. And at the time, it seemed encouragement to me. Mm-hmm. But after the fact, I'm thinking, wow, you know, we're still pretty conservative.
You know, Julie, I was going to ask you, so you take someone like Allison and her spouse, and, you know, if it holds true, he's probably making more money than she would be anyway. So isn't it just a natural progression then, a logical progression, to just keep promoting the person who's bringing home the most bacon?
Well, it might be in some people's minds, but we've lost what Allison could have brought to the table in any number of organizations in that process. And in many respects, it's because we couldn't offer the flexibility she would have needed to have a family and a career at the same time. And there are, I mean, as she indicated, in terms of family members, folks who still believe that that's the choice that ought to be made. We hear more and more, and in fact, with a lot of the women who are at very senior levels, what you find in many cases is that they've made an unusual choice in that the husband stays home and manages the household.
Vaxilla from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I very appreciate this topic. I grew up in the Caribbean, and I got my bachelor's degree, and then I came to Ohio to get my master's degree in accounting, and I thought that I wanted to be in public accounting until I talked to women who were in public accounting and wanted to get through that partnership level and the sacrifices that they would go through in terms of going back to work right after they had a baby, like 4 weeks. And I had small children, and that was a decision I definitely did not feel that I wanted to make. So I chose not to go into public accounting. Then I got a job. I applied for a job as a manager at one of the large warehouses here, and they hired me as a manager. But when I started, they actually made me a supervisor, and all the managers were male. So going through all of that, and then I had a lot of cultural differences that I had to learn. It's like I couldn't understand why they felt that a man could do better doing the same thing as a woman was. Then I went to work with the finance industry, and they kept promoting all men. And some of them who didn't have any degrees, didn't have the experience that I did, but I saw them being promoted up and, of course, making more money. And so I decided that I wanted to be a public employee and work for the government, and that's the best decision I've ever made. except for the downside of that being
now.
Now, you know, I had a baby recently, and the benefits are, you know, you have to accrue your benefits. And I had a baby early, then I had to stay home with him, then I had to stay home with me. And there's no maternity leave. And people talk about cutting back with the government, which is a different subject. But I had no benefits, and mm-hmm. I had to make the decision to stay home or go back to work. And I stayed home, but I still had my job to go to. And I'm just so enjoying this topic today. It just brings back so many memories. And thank you.
Thank you, Vixella. Scott Bowles, I read that women are promoted based on results. Men are promoted based on potential. What's the difference?
Well, it's always goes back to it's not what you know, it's who you know. You know, that could be some of it. The other cases, what I'll say is when I was trying to figure out why more women aren't actually being promoted, looked at, okay, what kind of jobs are they taking? So over a national average, I mean, secretaries and administrative assistants are the lifeblood of women's jobs. So that's the number one job that they hold. Well, there's probably not a lot of growth in that. So I guess it's in probably what their jobs are. Now, as far as trying to get to mid-level management, there's a ton of women at mid-level management. Once again, it's why they don't continue to grow. It could be any number of different things that Julia said or whatever the case may be. But it's baffling to me because, like I've said, when I've looked at wage and hour Department of Labor statistics, it screams that why wouldn't you have more women doing this? Because it makes sense for as a business owner to have women at leadership roles.
Well, Scott Bowles, thanks for joining us today.
It was a pleasure.
When we return, we're going to talk about some of those qualities that women bring to the boardroom, that women bring to the top, that make them so successful once they get there. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Last week on Car Talk, once again, we were brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant.
I recommend having a quick coupling so you can put the bottle back in there.
Yeah, but that's a royal pain. That's
He's in Alaska. You don't think that's a royal pain? I mean, this is just one more pain. Royal pain. For more well-reasoned car advice, join us this week for Car Talk.
Car Talk tomorrow at noon on 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, All Sides Weekend begins with a discussion of the summer movie season and also a discussion of the Ohio State Fair. Join us for All Sides Weekend from 11 o'clock until noon here on 89.7 NPR News. Sunny skies today with a high of 96. With the heat index, it'll feel like 108. There's a chance of a pop-up shower or thunderstorm this afternoon as well. Partly cloudy tonight with a chance of a pop-up shower and a low of 75 degrees. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome back. We're talking about women in the workplace. They have overall parity by and large, but fall way behind when it comes to senior leadership in publicly traded and private companies. They also are behind in higher education, despite the fact that they outnumber men in terms of adults with bachelor's degrees. Julie Graber, the CEO of the Institute of Women, is with us. Thanks again, Julie, for staying with us.
No problem.
And joining us now is Carol Clark. Carol is the board president of Women for Economic Leadership and Development of Central Ohio, otherwise known as WELD. It's a nonprofit organization that works to increase the number of women in leadership positions within the Central Ohio area. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Thank you. Thank you for having
us. Sounds like you've got quite a job to do.
Yes.
Since there are so few women, I mean, do you actually shoot for a statistical goal, a percentage or anything like that, or just take it one person at a time?
Well, what you've brought up is actually the genesis of the Central Ohio Leadership Census. We do have as our mission to increase the number of women in leadership and to help with women's economic development. But to increase something, you have to know where you are. So that was how we decided to get together with the Institute on Women and with Otterbein University to come up with the Central Ohio Leadership Census. Got to know where you are to know where you're going.
Scott Bowles talked about the fact that the bottom line shows that women bring value to any business, almost any business they're at and that they're leading. And whatever line you look at, it shows that kind of success. What are those qualities that women bring to the boardroom, bring to upper level management? That what are we talking about here? What is that?
I think the first thing is probably a different point of view. We just, I think, view the world a little bit differently, not better, not worse, but differently. I think we also bring a collaborative spirit. It isn't necessarily who wins and who loses so much as let's get the problem solved. So I think those two things are major contributions that all organizations can use.
And Susan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, this is a great topic.
Thank you.
I was listening to what you said about socialization or with regard to people, women advocate for others and not for themselves. And I immediately thought about the embodiment of that, Elizabeth Warren, who is such a popular person when she goes to do her speeches, and she is such an advocate. I mean, this is, if you take someone who has that attitude, then you'd immediately think, oh, well, they should work in the government because that's what those people are supposed to do, advocate for others. And yet she is evidently not what Congress wants her to be doing because they evidently don't want to put her in that position. And I think it's with her qualifications, it's incredible to me that she's at the top of the glass ceiling, but it's still there.
Julie Graber, do you think of the genders related to this, what's happening with Elizabeth Warren? Of course, she's would be the consumer advocate for the United States.
I'd like to think that that's more about politics than it is gender. It isn't, I don't think, a question of her credentials as much as it is a disagreement about what needs to happen in that particular arena right now. And it's just unfortunate that she's caught in the middle of that.
Marlene from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning. I have two advanced degrees and, I'm in my late 30s. But I have to say that for the past, I'm going to say about last 10 years, every single interview I've ever been on, I find male or female, the interviewer spends an awful lot of time staring at my hands.
Which
I'm not
has.
Married.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not married, and I always feel like they're looking for a ring. And occasionally I'll get a question asking about relationships and, trying to stay away from the kinds of questions that are going to get them in trouble with the EEOC. However, I feel like I spend an awful lot of time explaining my networks, my roots, my connections to the town wherever I am. And I always wonder whether or not being married is a negative or a positive when I'm in an interview.
In most respects, it ought to be an advantage. What the research shows, there was a research study earlier this year, late last year, that showed that women with a college degree living in an urban setting, one of the top 150 cities across the U.S. who are unmarried and childless actually made more than their male counterparts. Now, remove any one of those factors, and the advantage disappears completely. But it certainly, it is an issue, I think. I think in spite of everything that we've done and what's been talked about in legislation, there is still a mommy penalty and a daddy bonus in terms of hiring and compensation in many organizations. And so even though you're not married, they're trying to figure out whether you're headed in that direction would be my guess.
Thank you, Marlene, for that call. We have an email from Jerome in Marysville. Is there any comparative data on female homemakers returning to the workforce after raising a family versus stay-at-home dads? I'll bet women have an easier, more successful return to work than men. It is my experience as a stay-at-home dad, not out of choice but necessity, that most employers, even in enlightened professions like librarianship, are very distrustful of men returning to the workforce after raising a family. I'm going to take a stab at that and say there's so few men that do that.
This is Carol. And what I'd like to bring up, and it's only anecdotal, I think the caller is correct, or the person who sent the email is correct. There is a difference in how the returning worker is viewed. And one thing that I think could be done to maybe alleviate that situation is to encourage more men to take family leave, and then it will become more normal in the workplace and it won't be an issue. Unfortunately, I agree with Julie that it is probably an issue today.
We have an email from Charlotte in Columbus, says, isn't it also possible that some of us women with the raw talent to become a CEO look at corporate culture and decide that that is not a culture we aspire to? Just recently on NPR, I heard a quip from an interviewee that one was far more likely to encounter a psychopath in the boardroom than on the street. There is a grain of truth in that for many of us who have watched what is going on around us from behind our word processors and the assembly line and have been repulsed by it. So we do what we must to earn our modest living and invest our talents and abilities in other aspects of our lives. In other words, they're not going to change the system, so they just don't get involved with it.
Well, I don't think we can sit back and suggest that there can't be changes made in the system. And I think we've got to get in the game and we've got to change it. We've seen the impact of having situations where there has not been diversity in leadership. And we as a society have paid for that. And while I realize that whether you're talking business or politics, a lot of women say, I don't want to be a part of that culture. That culture isn't a given. We need to get in there and we need to change it.
And that's one of the things that we'd like to at least introduce the conversation about with our census. What we plan to do with this report, as Julie mentioned earlier, is first of all to make sure that it is an annual event. We will be looking at this data every year. So it's not something that's going to go away. It's not a one-shot thing. Mm-hmm. What we'd like to do now is introduce a conversation with the community. This is an economic issue. This is not a women's issue. So what we have started, and we've actually had our first meeting, we want to reach out to the entities that are listed on the census, and we want to meet with them. We want to find out the positives, what things they're doing within their organization to improve the leadership of women in their organization. And we want to find out how we can help to increase that effort. And we actually have had our first meeting. It was really a very positive meeting. And we've gotten some good ideas going forward. Longer term, what we plan to do is to create a database of best practices. So when organizations say that we don't know what to do or maybe help us set up what to do, we will have a list of many things that can be helpful within the organization. And we also plan to have a database of women that are ready for the boardroom and thus can affect the change going forward. And we want this to be a very positive community-wide conversation because this is economic development we're talking about. And we're talking about it in Central Ohio, and we have some good ideas on how we can improve our economic viability.
Paul in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Honored guests. A lovely program. I worked for some couple decades in healthcare administration, and in that capacity, you work with a whole lot of women. I would say that abilities are kind of roughly equally distributed across, you know, the sexes, if you will. But I would note that a male manager who's got some smarts and finds a female, I don't know, supervisor, intermediary, secretary, whatever the term you want to use, is loath to let her go. Not I don't mean he's suppressing her, but she's getting a whole hell of a lot of work done. and he knows that much of his success is predicated on her abilities.
Kind of reminds me of The Shawshank Redemption or something.
Well, okay. No, I'm not a movie guy, but I'm just saying that there is a, and again, this may be the enculturation, you know, the helper role, if you will. Again, I've met many incompetent women and incompetent men in all walks of life. But if you find a woman who's a hard worker and dedicated to whatever the proposition is, you desperately want to hang on to her. Sex, regardless, I'm just saying it's not a male-female. It's simply that this person, you know, will get the job done. At the same time, there are plenty of incompetent women as well. I suspect that there is an unknown kind of back-minded thing where an upper management man may feel, mm-hmm. My goodness, I can't lose Joan.
Carol, what do you make of that? That's not a new story. We've heard that before. I joked around about The Shawshank Redemption, but
no, I don't think it's a new story either. On the other hand, I think that we tend to promote people that are like us. And when you're in a leadership or a management position, you have to work very hard not to do that because you need diversity around you. So I think what often happens in an organization is not so much that the person may not want to promote one of the people that work for them. It's that they're looking around for someone that's like them because they're comfortable with that and they promote them. So I think introducing more women into management and leadership ranks and making everyone comfortable with that situation is what needs to be done.
They passed a law in Norway that forced companies to meet a quota. They call it quotation there. And nobody wanted it. Nobody, women or men in upper management in Norway wanted to be forced to do this. And I would suspect the same would occur in the United States. But the point is they did a follow-up. Census, if you will, and follow up with the folks in a study, and every single person in the study opposed the legislation at the outset, and some of them still opposed it, but they had to admit that business was better.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't mm-hmm. the end of the world.
they said that women brought things that they hadn't expected.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like like questioning things more.
Yes, absolutely. If you're in a group of folks who are all alike, you are much more likely to get groupthink. Women who serve on corporate boards often talk about being a bit of an outsider, especially if they're the only one. But it's a whole lot easier to ask a question when you are in that role. And a number of the Scandinavian countries have moved to the point where they have required businesses to diversify their leadership. Germany and Great Britain are talking about it in terms of if companies don't do a better job over the next couple of years, they will impose quotas. So in some countries, it's worked. And folks, as Carol said, it didn't bring about the end of the world. It actually benefited the organizations.
What are some other qualities? Because eventually, if it becomes the 50-50 prospect that you're hoping for ultimately or whatever, but you lose that outlier status and those qualities that go with that.
But maybe you've changed the groupthink. So maybe the groupthink is a little bit more diverse. And sort of talking on a different tack now, but I have served on a couple of boards. And when you first enter the boardroom, you are watching to see what's going on. And it is easier to ask questions at that point because you're a new person, you don't know what the lay of the land is, and people don't get offended or upset. And the hope is, I think, with more women on boards, that other people on the board will start to agree with you. And I actually did see that happen. So we just have to get more women up there. And it won't be the end of the world if we do that.
You know, I wrote a column a couple years back about a power that the governor has to appoint people to boards and commissions in the state of Ohio and really, you know, all over the place. And at the time of the ones surveyed, about 75% of the appointments were men, and about 60% were men, and about 75% of the positions that were filled were, or of those boards and commissions were held by men. And someone said, well, what difference does it really make if you're on the, you know, dental assistant board or whatever that might be? And the point was made, well, it's a resume builder. It's that's part of the ammo you bring to something, you know, as you're getting promoted up the ladder. And when you're missing those pieces, you know, you're missing something.
And we have the opportunity in Ohio right now to affect a couple of boards. One is the Small Business Council that's being currently appointed. I think that will be appointed June 1st, and it will be interesting to see what the male-female representation is on that. And then, of course, there's Jobs Ohio on the state level.
These are the new the new boards, and you're looking very closely at who will be appointed.
Who will
to
be
those.
Appointed, right.
Julie Graber, any parting thoughts? Is this your an ongoing thing? Are you going to change anything up next year? Anything differently? You do anything differently?
Well, I think we certainly will do some assessment of it, some of the conversations that we have with organizations in terms of best practices. I think we'll continue to look at, we really feel that executive officers, CEOs, and board members are three critical places to look in terms of diversity because they are definitely at the top leadership level in organizations. So I would expect it to be fairly similar, especially given that we hope to be watching trends and hopefully seeing changes.
Okay. Julie Graber, CEO of the Institute on Women. Thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks,
and also,
Ann.
Carol Clark. She's the board president of Women for Economic Leadership and Development of Central Ohio. Thanks for joining us, Carol.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1. And WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.